and no faith in God has got no strength. And a nation with no values other than their own values.
Hey there, oh there, you're listening to Super Tool Shed, the only podcast on the internet where consistency is more or less bunk. I'm Bennett the Sage, I'm joined by Mark the Engineer, and today features the usual calming duet that quells the fanboy's rage. Yes, the trailer for Michael Bay's Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles has finally hit the internet, and nerds everywhere have already called for Mr. Bay's balls on a spit roast. And it's up to us to save that poor, poor multimillionaire. And if that weren't enough, it looks like that Oculus that you've been eyeing is going to come with a shit ton of game requests, pokes, and quizzes about what kind of X are you that you could possibly not care less about. But first, the pleasantries. Mark, how have you been?
Well, let's see. Congratulations to us. We actually managed to record another episode of Tool Shed.
And what has it been, like over about a month and a half since our last episode?
So far, and it nearly got even longer. But there's reasons. We've been busy. We've been working on side projects, and we've been trying to juggle all of our usual duties with brand new duties, which involve Blender.
If you've been following Mark's Twitter, then you would know that he has been toying around with Blender and posting some of his models. And it's actually really surprising from the outside looking in, the progress that he has made from knowing absolute jack shit about 3D modeling to where he is now.
That's right. That's what happens when you're fucked in the head. You have the ability to learn everything inside of 90 days. Oh, the only price I pay, the only toll I pay is near crushing social awkwardness, depression, social anxiety, the hatred of crowds, hatred of people. It's all worth it. what is it? There is no art that hath not some strangeness about it.
I just know that some of the people in our audience would gladly trade. So they're already social awkwardness with some of your superpowers.
It's like the crappiest fucking superpower ever, though. I really consider it to be. But so I've been doing some work in Blender. Hopefully it'll resolve into a project. Also, I'm going to be appearing at ZenkaiCon in Lancaster at the end of the month of April as one of a trio of people, me, Bill Rogers, Greg Hauser, friends of the show. You know them. You love them.
Hopefully you love them.
Hopefully. Elsewise, we've been really wasting our fucking time. So I'm going to be doing the 3-day voiceover workshop. And also, I'm going to be doing, because they asked me, like, do you want to do a panel? And I just kind of jokingly said, yeah, sure. And then they said, then they didn't get the joke. And so then I kind of got stuck doing a panel, like, okay, what's your panel going to be? New media, voice acting, and you, also known as how to get into voice acting abridged. Great! How long do you want it to be? An hour and a half. You got it!
Oh, you poor, poor motherfucker.
Oh my God. You know, like,
now you're going to be on stage in front of people with, you won't have Kyle to help you, you won't have Bill. What are you going to do?
Well, first off, if this show proves anything, is that I can fill 2 hours. I don't even fucking need you.
who will be there to poke you with the stick?
Look, man, any line of conversation will eventually get me poked with the stick. So, bow-chicka-bow-wow. Like, the way that I'm in, because I haven't really roadmapped the panel yet, and I only have a month to do it, but I can, you know, I've come up with presentations in far less time. The thing that I really don't like about a lot of panels is that there's always a Q&A portion at the end, and me personally, I kind of prefer to be fed into by the audience. Like, some people tout audience interaction, but their version of audience interaction is, okay, so all of you shut up for 45 minutes, and the last 15 minutes we're going to do a Q&A. And my thing is that I much preferred, like, my brain is sometimes a fractal, so I much prefer to have the audience kind of interrupt me with a question that's correlating to something that I just said, and then that'll make for a more robust panel overall. Everybody kind of gets the feel of they got their questions answered. Nobody gets left behind. I would rather engage an audience directly, answer their questions, make sure that that's relative to what it is that I'm trying to talk about, as opposed to forcing them to sit there, fold their hands, you know, sit down, shut up, let me get through my presentation. Okay, questions.
Well, I have to admit that I am very guilty of the Q&A panel. It's kind of a lazy setup, I'll be the first one to admit. Not everyone can be Kevin Smith, but I try my very hardest to answer any kind of questions that people might have for me about what I do or who I am or who they think I am, is more often the case, and try to leave them with a little laugh. Let them learn something, but also, you know, make sure that they're not sitting at a lecture.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
And that's really what it is that I'm trying to avoid, is that I don't want to lecture an audience. And I don't want to be, you know, like, I don't want to be on a stage in the middle of the night because they made, because I think I actually explicitly asked that this panel be later in the day, and they gave it to me from like 9:45 to 12. So that was, because my persistence has always been like, you can't have me on a panel. Listen to Toolshed. You know you can't have me on a panel before 10 o'clock. Because if you try and rein me in, I'm just bored. And I would rather say nothing as opposed to trying to say anything that's not going to hurt your feelings and get your parents mad at me. So they gave me this panel at 9:45, and I'm like, and that's somewhat exciting because it means that I can just kind of do what I do here with you, but with an audience watching me and judging me. So that'll be fun.
And I hope that goes well for you. I really am. I wish I could be there for you, but unfortunately, now is around the time where it's kind of becomes crunch time for me. I think it's safe to say that safe for us to say that I am going to be taking the month of June off. I want there to be like a period where I don't have to worry about writing another Anime Abandoned or editing anything. I'm just going to take the month of June just off. Let me write whatever I want to write and not have to worry about meeting deadlines for at least a month. It's a necessary detox, as it were. I'll mention it on the episode leading into June that I'm going to be taking the month of June off. But for my loyal listeners out there, well, I should say our loyal listeners, I think they deserve to be in the know first.
Yep, so no Anime Abandoned in June. Don't know whether or not there's going to be any tool shed in June. Probably not.
Maybe, but I'm going to be like gone for the first 2 weeks of June. There might be one in the later in the month, which also means there is not going to be any Sage Versus until at least the third week of June because I will be unavailable. So I'm not quite sure what movies are scheduled to be out in the first few weeks of June, but if I wind up missing a big one, I am going to be so angry.
Yeah, well, that's what happens when you have a weekly topical let's go to the movies show.
Yeah, I know. I remember, like, when you contacted me ever Sage Versus premiered when it was known by the, you know, let's go see a movie, and you were just completely angry with me.
Livid, I mean, is the word.
You were fuming. I mean, it got to the point where you couldn't even talk to me for, like, over the weekend over a movie vlog series.
Yeah, because, like, not to detract from anybody that does that, but there are art forms, in quotations, of new media that just kind of I don't get. And maybe that's why it is that I just kind of find them not entertaining. Like, I don't find Let's Plays entertaining. I really do think that you need to be some sort of head-over-heels fanboy to enjoy a Let's Play. Because, I mean, yes, there are funny Let's Play people, but generally speaking, like, I just don't find the fun in Let's Play. Like, I enjoy watching playthroughs every once in a while when I just can't get to a game, so I'm like, you know what, I'm just gonna sit my ass down and fast forward through all the boring shit and watch cutscenes. But Let's Plays I've never really jived with. Topical movie vlog series I've never really jived with because, I don't know. I mean, like, yes, it's a movie review, but it's, and it's a more conversational type of review, which, you know, that's the sort of thing that I like, and it should be something that I like. But there was something about you doing it that just didn't seem like we put so much work into Anime Abandon, and then for you to kind of turn around, just turn on the camera with Gabe and be like, let's bullshit. It's like, you're not always great unscripted.
Yeah, I know. I'm not exactly very... I tend to use filler words a lot when I'm talking extemporaneously, especially when I'm with Gabe. I tend to reflect a lot of how someone is talking to me back at them. It's sort of a matching cocktail personality tick that I have. But I do think that making this series is, one, good for me as a kind of a person, because, I mean, if I wasn't doing this series, one, I would never see, I would have never seen Noah. Not because it didn't interest me, it's just I had no impetus to see it. But I'm glad I did. I'm glad for every movie I see. Excuse me. I'm glad for every movie that I see on Sage Versus. And it's also good for Gabe, just to get him to also be more comfortable talking and spelling out thoughts and trying to align his words, as it were. But it's still a work in progress, but I think the whole dynamic is getting better.
And the other thing that made me mad was just the overall lack of presentation on the whole thing, where the title just pissed me off, because that title just smacked me right in the face, and immediately my brain went, why do I work so hard? Why the flying fuck do I work so hard for no money to help my friend if all he's going to do is turn around and have this... have this marketing diarrhea all over the page that I fucking built. Like, it just drove me insane, in the sense that, like, you really do hate to build something. Like you would hate to bake a cake and, like, bake a cake from fucking scratch.
And you milled the flour.
You milled the flour. You fucking got your cake recipe that you've perfected over years. You bake your layers. You decorate it. You've got your fucking fondant on it, and you shape it into something really cool. And then some asshole, like, after you spend like hours on this cake, some asshole just kind of walks up when you present it to them, and all they say is, "Well, it's nice." You know, with no respect of the art of what it took to make that thing happen. So the title, Let's Go See a Movie, was just like, oh my God, really? Like, Let's Go See a Movie? That's the title?
I do understand where you're coming from, and your side of the argument eventually won out. But I completely understand your point of view of, why do I work so hard? I mean, I get like that every time I get like something from my dad that says, hey, look at this family circus, and I'm just... why do I try so hard? This guy's family's getting more money than I'll ever see in my entire life for family circus lack of humor.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, my dad just cannot understand it. And when I tell him that family circus literally depresses me, please stop this. Just stop. All right. But I think that my sadness over family circus can be shared by a lot of you with current events. The Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles is, well, it's beholden to a lot of our generation. And, well, when they heard news that Michael Bay is involved with the new movie, I think the internet shat itself. I think there's really no other word to describe it. And everyone has just been beside themselves over what this movie was going to be about, because all they could think about is the Transformers movies and how horrible they were. And not to mince words here, they are horrible. And then Michael Bay linked to another, much loved childhood product. And then finally, they have something tangible to hate. And I think the consensus is largely overreacting. Doesn't look good, but not the worst thing to ever happen to humanity, as a lot of the people seem to think it is.
Yeah, the first interaction I had with the trailer was on my Facebook feed. One of my friends had said, you know what? I hate the look of the new Turtles. Fuck this movie. And as cute as that was, immediately I went, oh, the trailer is out.
Ooh, goody.
So ran downstairs, turned it on, watched it. and immediately had a feeling of, I will spend money to see this.
The only feeling that I had was like, while this doesn't look like the worst movie I'm going to see this year, I mean, that's probably going to Spider-Man 2.
Honestly, like, the only thing that I can see that's wrong with the movie is the glaring, you know, is the big fat clubbed thumb elephant in the room, which is Megan Fox. Sometimes she can pull acting out of her ass, and it's interesting, but that's not her track record. So casting her as April O'Neil is just kind of like, all right.
And I'm surprised that she
everybody is everybody's shocked, and like nobody knows how long the blowjob was, but
for Megan Fox to get back into movies, if that meant that she would have to work in a Michael Bay movie, Michael Bay produced movie nonetheless, but still a Michael Bay movie.
Yeah. So nobody knows how long that blowjob was, but it was a long, confident suck. In the words of a bit of Ryan Lurie. because the trailer had been screened for press like a couple days before, and someone had done a write-up of it on IO9, and I read the write-up and I said, well, that all sounds really interesting, because they were talking about how the turtles take up actual mass and space, and how when they move around, they sound heavy. How they're bigger than you're used to them being, but it actually makes sense in the sphere of this world and all. Like, and I went, okay, well, that's good that you can speak well towards this, other than the fact that they just could not fucking stop hashing on the faces. And then I watched the trailer, and for a second I got the fizz, and at the end of the trailer I laughed, and I went, oh, wait, what happened? The fizz? Laugh? Ah, you succeeded in making a trailer that I actually liked. I mean, if there's anything that Michael Bay is good at, whether it be, you know, by direct influence or even by siring a movie, it's destruction. So, like, the scene in the trailer with the Humvee getting fucking knocked over, I was like, wow, all right, that's pretty good. The dialogue in the trailer, you know, like, I actually do want to take a moment and talk about William Fichtner, however it is that you pronounce his name. I always say Fichtner. The dude takes up, like, he's furniture. He's a furniture actor. He just kind of shows up in places, is really cool, and then leaves without you ever really knowing what his name was. You didn't really care about who he was in Equilibrium. You really didn't give a shit about who he was in The Dark Knight. You just kind of know that those movies were better because he was in them.
And yet you hated him in Drive Angry.
I didn't see Drive Angry. That wasn't me.
No, I remember. Like, I was playing. I had Drive Angry in the background.
Yeah.
I had Drive Angry in the background. He's like, who was that? He sucks. It's like, that's William Fichtner, dude. It's like, oh! Oh, there was like an audible groan you made.
Yeah, that's... I haven't seen Drive Angry, so I can't judge the entirety of his performance. I mean, but it did sound about as bad as the dude in Constantine who was like, fire, John, I'm born of this! You know, like, that's a groaner. Like,
Busy. Yeah.
I'm happy that, you know, like, that Fichtner's a fucking shredder. Although there are people that are like, well, it doesn't make sense. It's whitewashing. It's this. It's that. It's like, look, shut up. All right. Like, if his name isn't Oroku Saki, I'm not going to shit a fucking brick. If his, like, black market underground code name is Oroku Saki, and then he gets the nickname, like, Oroku Saki is the Shredder, I would be fairly okay with that.
And yet, when a white woman is called Sawa, all of a sudden, it's just...
No, that just makes no sense. That makes... That makes exactly no sense. Because, this was kind of explained to us in Iron Man 3, where, like, why is Ben Kingsley the Mandarin? Well, the Mandarin is technically a terrible Japanese caricature based on a stereotype, in the same way that, you know, like, the buck-toothed Asian with a bowler hat. So, we can't show that on screen. But what we can do is we can make the Mandarin about presentation. That the fact that he calls himself the Mandarin is just something that you do to strike fear into the hearts of your enemies. Like calling, you know, like siring someone of the Sith a Darth. Like, you don't have to fucking do it. Like, he didn't have to be Darth Vader, but Darth Vader sounds better than fucking Vader, even though Vader all by itself is a pretty badass-sounding name. So, honestly, like since it was explained to us like that in Iron Man 3, right up until the point where Guy Pearce fucking ruined it, it's like, I'm the Mandarin!
No, you're not.
It's like, no, you're not, bro. Sorry. You're just a ruggedly handsome dude who got some really bad fucking makeup put on.
You could have been Daredevil if you played your cards right, but I think you'd actually played your cards right, avoiding that mess of a movie.
So I'm cool with Fitchner being whether he's a Rokusaki or if he's just a Shredder or if a Rokusaki is like a black market code name, like if that's how he presents himself to the Foot, whatever. You know, like, this trailer pretty much guaranteed you everything that's important about the Ninja Turtles. It shows you Ooze. It shows you the TCRI logo. It shows you the Shredder. It shows you the fucking Turtles. It shows you that Mikey is an idiot. Now, the only thing that I kind of wish is that when I go to see this movie, if they have the big plentiful balls to add Casey Jones... Because you need Casey Jones. You need Casey because Casey is the audience proxy. Elsewise, there is no audience proxy because April isn't the audience proxy. She's too fucking hapless. Especially if you're going to get Megan Fox to play her. I'm really sorry, but... Like, Megan Fox does not exude, you know, like, strong, confident April O'Neil. She exudes, you know, the version of April in Turtles Forever. Where it's like, well, first we got to save April. April's not even here. Well, wherever she is, she's in trouble. She's always in trouble.
You gotta admit, that was a brilliant moment in an otherwise shit video.
That was really good. And it was true. So, with the casting of Megan Fox, I can cut her a break and be like, okay, you can be April O'Neil, but I'm sorry, but you're fucking yellow jumpsuit April O'Neil. You're Nell, and you're just constantly, like, every time you turn around, there's Snidely Whiplash. Just waiting to fuck your shit and tie you to the rails. So, since she can't be the audience proxy because she's as hapless as Daphne Blake is, then that means...
If not more.
Because at least, you know, Daphne, like, straightened up and took self-defense classes eventually.
If you're going by live-action movie standards.
Yeah. But I'll still count them. But since she can't be it, then that means that Casey's got to be it. And Casey is just fun.
I'm not a big Turtles guy. I didn't grow up watching the cartoon, so my whole viewpoint of this movie is just, like I said with you, outside looking in. I have no emotional investment to how this movie is going to wind up, but there is a part of me that I don't like personally, but does take a little bit of pleasure in fanboy misery. Just a little bit. It's for the same reason why I kind of like the Batman and Robin. It's the only movie in the entire Batman canon that takes the grim, dark Batman that everyone loves and just turns it into a spectacle, a neon shit spectacle. It's a farce of a movie, but it's a great farce as far as I'm concerned. And I'm hoping that this movie takes that kind of cue.
I don't dig on fanboy misery. I really don't. And the reason why is because it permeates your Twitter. It permeates your Facebook. It just seeps into every nook, cranny, and pore of your daily news feed whenever it is something like this goes down. And this is just, you know, immediate, you know, like snapshot of the way that the turtles look. Like, why do they have lips? Well, they need to form words. Like, I'm really sorry to fucking tell you this, but you need lips to form words, or else it's just going to be a ventriloquist act, and that's not really visually very interesting. And it's this shock value of, like, where are the beaks? Why do they have nostrils? Well, I don't know, maybe because they need to breathe. or else, like, because if they don't have fucking nostrils, they're gonna sound like this. And this isn't very, you can't stand the sound of this for very long. Whatever you,
I'll stop you, Shredder.
Yeah, like, whatever, whatever you hear this guy at a convention, you immediately want to walk away from him. So that's not something that you want permeating your movie. So, of course, they have nostrils. Of course, they have lips. They have to be grounded in some sort of reality that allows them to walk and talk and breathe and do all of these things in a way that won't drive you nuts for an entire movie. The fact that they're bigger than normal, I think, is actually kind of cool, even though people are complaining about it. Like, well, they're supposed to be little mutant freaks. They've never been this big. You're right, they've never been this big, but at the same time, I think it's actually kind of badass. I mean, they're mutant turtles. What are the rules?
I kind of agree with you on that, although I was reading a retweet earlier from the one, the only, the guy who some would argue ruined the 90s for them. Christ, I wish I could remember his name. Rob Liefeld, who basically said, I like how big the turtles are, ostensibly. And I got to think that if you're on the side of Rob Liefeld, you do feel a little dirty, don't you?
I don't take my cues from Liefeld. My cues are my own. Like, if Liefeld happens to be in the same alignment as me in terms of how big the turtles are, fine, what the fuck ever. It's not like I'm saying I'm with Liefeld. No, motherfucker, I'm with me. I'm with me, and I'm with, you know, like, and you should be with you, too. You fucking take your own cues. You sit there and you fucking decide. But decide based on, you know, what you see removed from shock. Watch the trailer a couple of times. Let your inner child watch it. Because that's what's really missing, is that it's adults that are complaining about this. It's adults who have the nostalgia goggles on complaining about this. And that's really kind of ruining the cred of this movie before it even fucking comes out. Not that they're, because they're still going to fucking go. But it doesn't even matter, because we've talked about this before. If you give these people everything they want, they still don't go see the movie, because Scott Pilgrim. Scott Pilgrim gave you absolutely no compromise, almost everything you wanted, except for a different ending.
And, you know, and it's a goose egg movie. It made goose egg.
It made no money. It got fan base. It got cult status. But it made exactly no money.
If your budget is $150 million, you learn right there as a warning. Like, the fans aren't always right.
No, they're not. And you can respect source material all you fucking want. But if you absolutely cram everything in there to keep the fans happy and, you know, to not remove anything or potentially not remove anything that they'd want to see, then you're still going to end up with either people who are angry because of some arbitrary reason, or they're just not going to fucking go see it. And more importantly, Scott Pilgrim was an important film in terms of proving that these people don't make up a majority of the movie, of a movie going audience, because, yes, every person you and I know went to go see Scott Pilgrim. All the rest of the people didn't, because they didn't understand it, because it wasn't for them. But this movie was made for the people who we know. And that's a really great gesture. It really is. But it does give you a sense of scale in terms of how you motherfuckers are screaming into the wind, and you amount to all of a whisper in the grand scheme of everything in terms of movie numbers. So I don't like the fact that, like even with that idea of scale, that, you know, the amount of people who are complaining are minuscule compared to the amount of parents who are going to take their kids to see this movie, because, you know what, it might be good enough. I'm not saying it's going to be good. I'm not saying it's going to be amazing. I'm not even going to say that it's going to give you the fizz right down the root of your fucking cock, but I'm saying that it might be good enough.
And really, when you look at the pantheon of Turtles movies, good enough is actually great.
It is. I mean, here's my opinion on good enough. Transformers Dark of the Moon was good enough.
I'd argue with you on that
one. You can argue with me all you fucking want, but the fact is that that movie was closer to the vest to Transformers than the two that came before it.
All right, I'll agree with you on that one.
That's why I say it's good enough. Like, I'm not even calling them better than the first two. I'm saying that as far as keeping it close to the vest, like, when you look at where G1 is, where all those characters came from, and then you look at the representation of those characters in the Dark of the Moon, you kind of go, well, they didn't stray that far. I mean, the connective tissue is different. You know, the road is different, and absolutely fucking Leonard Nimoy's Sentinel Prime was fucking weird.
They did not earn that line, you know, the needs
the many outweigh the needs of the few. They didn't earn that. The weird fucking murderous nature, the fed up murderous nature of Optimus Prime. You know, when he comes out at the end of the movie, like, we will kill them all. I was like, what?
That was definitely a step backwards, as far as I'm concerned, as far as being, you know, close to the series of the Transformers series. But I guess on the whole, if you have to judge each movie accordingly, the third movie is the best movie. That isn't to say it's a good movie. It's just
the best of the three. It's the least of three evils. But that made it good enough. And this new Turtles movie might just be good enough. It might be good enough to justify two more movies as opposed to, you know, a studio just dumping money into it regardless of how it performs because they want their goddamn trilogy franchise. And let's just look at it even in another light. It's not M. Night Shyamalan. No matter how this movie gets presented, no matter how this amount of time plays out on screen, it will never be as bad as Last Airbender.
I think that if you have to play the M. Night Shyamalan card, the boogeyman of Hollywood, as he's become known as, then I think there's hyperbole in the argument. I think that there is, like, people need to really take a step back and realize that the world isn't ending, all right? Your precious Turtles movies, your precious Turtles memories are safely locked inside your head, and no movie, even if M. Night Shyamalan did wind up making a Turtles movie, there is nothing that he could do to the Turtles that could take away the first time you ever saw the cartoon.
Oh, no. Trust me. He can. He has that ability. He has that ability to crush your love of something. Because I'm a hardcore Avatar person. And sitting in a theater watching that movie was like somebody opening up my chest with a fucking spreader and shitting in my heart. It was bad. It was just bad to watch a guy struggle to try and cram all of book one into a single film, transplant a bunch of dialogue that he didn't set up properly, so none of it makes sense.
Yeah, I guess I can't really win this argument with a fan of the show. I never had any investment in the show, and I still think that movie's a piece of shit, just on principles of movie making alone. But like, I don't think I've ever had that white, you know, that white heat, white light, white heat passion as far as being a fan of something and then watching a movie adaptation of it and it just like shitting in my memory.
Because for some reason you just have nothing. Like, you didn't, like, you just grew up with what seems like nothing. Not Street Fighter, not G.I. Joe, not Mortal Kombat, not the Ninja Turtles, not Avatar.
Like, no, well, like you, then again,
like not Sonic the Hedgehog, not Mario, like nothing.
No, I played those games. I've seen those shows. It just never really figured into me. They didn't really make me into the person I am today. I mean, all the stuff that I was really hardcore into, I grew out of. I was a pretty big Pokemon fan back in the day. And when then I turned 13, it's like, huh, I wonder what pussy feels like.
Mm.
That was basically my Pokemon experience. And all the my precious childhood memories, no one's ever tried to make a movie out of it. No one's trying to make a movie out of The Adventures of Pete and Pete. And no one's trying to make a movie out of Ren and Stimpy. Although, I will say, the Ren and Stimpy adult cartoon hour, that was a slap in the face.
Yeah, if you were any kind of Ren and Stimpy fan, that was not what you wanted.
Not at all. But that was as close as I ever got to like that fanboy rage. I guess I just had the perspective of, like, there's nothing that they can do that could take my Ren and Stimpy DVDs away from me. Or all the memories of me watching the show as a kid with my older brother. There's nothing they could do to take that away from me.
Well, the problem comes from Because it's a really easy thing to come up with this buzz phrase, like, we live in an entitled culture. All of these people who are complaining are the products of an entitled culture where they feel like they own the things that they love. And it's really easy to say that, but do the people who say it understand it? And more importantly, do the people that they're saying it to understand it? The fact is that it these people are reacting because they feel like it's something that's being done to them. Like, you're doing this to me, Michael Bay. You did fucking Transformers to me. You're doing fucking Turtles to me. Like, how dare you do this to me? It's like, it's not being done to you. You are reacting to change. I mean, granted, it's fucking stark change. It's change that you weren't necessarily prepared for, but change fucking happens. Someone's gonna move your cheese one of these days. The vacuum expands. You know, like, you end up, like, you start with your source material, and then you end up with Terry McGinnis one day. Like, that's just, it happens.
Yeah. And there's nothing wrong with that. There's nothing wrong with that. Change.
The only thing that's wrong with it is your reaction to it. Because you might not have liked Terry McGinnis when it first happened. You might have called bullshit on Batman Beyond, but by the end of it, you're like, Terry's fucking awesome.
I don't care if it's Eric from Boy Meets World.
Seriously. Like eventually, you know, like, you had, because you had your comfort, you had your safety net, because, you know, Kevin Conroy's right there to guide his hand and make him not fuck up and be like, I'm old Bruce and I'm secretly your father, but we're not going to resolve that for like another 5 years.
Now, that's a whole can of worms, from what I understand, to some people.
So, but yeah, I mean, like, it's not that these things are being done to you. It's that, you know, for the same reason why there's a new 52, for the same reason why it is there's an Ultimate Marvel, you grew up. You're out of the demo. I'm really sorry, but you're not. Like, your dollars don't matter, because collectively your dollars amount to Scott Pilgrim. And I think that really should be, that should be like the thing. That should be on a big fucking billboard behind every one of these adaptations of shit that we grew up with, is that collectively your voting dollars amount to Scott Pilgrim, which is exactly dick.
And there, right next to that is a picture of Scott Pilgrim crying.
Yeah.
Oh, God, I forgot that guy's name.
Michael Cera.
Believe me. Out of sight, out of mind for about 3 years, all right? Give the guy a break. I don't have Michael Cera on the brain as I did when it back in 2009.
Mm. But,
I wanted to kind of dovetail off that thought with this. I get why people around us especially have this kind of mindset, because we you know, nostalgia is our business. Like, I make videos about old anime.
Mm-hmm.
And we can't help but, you know, play around with the nostalgic feelings of our fans and ourselves a little bit. Like, I always, when I talk about, like, the anime of old, and usually I'm kind of bitter towards it or angry towards it, as was the case, because, you know, a lot of shit back in those days. But it's not like what I'm portraying is how I honestly really feel. It's an exaggeration of what I feel, but it's not like I would literally find a Masami Obari, you know, grab him by his balls and then put time to a tow truck and drag him for about 200 feet. Although that would be kind of funny. I'm not saying you should do it. I'm just saying if you're going to do it, videotape it.
Mm-hmm.
And so we're kind of looped into this kind of conversation as people who make it our business to talking about nostalgic properties.
Yeah, and that, like, it's all well and good to have the dialogue, but, you know, there's got to be some civility in it. And there's got to be some introspection in terms of, like, okay, if you feel angry, ask yourself why. And if the answer really kind of distills down to because it's different, give it up. Just give it the fuck up and try something new. You might like it. Who the hell knows? Like, everybody that got on our fucking shit over Devil May Cry. Like, it's like, I'm really sorry. I liked it. I really fucking liked it. It was different. It was fun. It was, you know, a combat system that you can wrap your head around, and eventually it rewarded you as an old school Devil May Cry fan. Like, there was, like, and what boiled down, what everybody's complaints boiled down to was, I don't like Devil May Cry because it's different. And that's not to say that different is always good. I'm, you know, Halo Wars was not good. Fucking Bomberman Act Zero was not good. The proposal for Vector Man 3 was not good. But there is something to be said about, you know, like, you can at least try something different. And if you try it and you don't like it, then you're more than justified to blast it on Twitter and wear a fucking t-shirt, have it printed on Cafe Press if you want. Just wear a fucking t-shirt that says, I tried this thing and it was bullshit. But you really do have to kind of audit yourself and figure out whether or not your reasons for hating something directly out of hand is because of the two words, it's different. Like, different scares me. It's like, well, difference scares everybody. Change scares everybody. We are made to adapt to change, but part of that adaptation is, in fact, fear. Now, how we act upon that fear is what separates us.
And to a lot of people, fear is bad. Like, I get why their fear is scary, because, you know, it's fear. But fear is also a natural response. It's not the end-all to be-all. Like, if I feel scared, then there is something wrong. It's just that natural response. You just learn to... It's sort of like a reflexive emotion that you take and you examine and you feel, well, why do I feel like this?
Yeah, where, like either fear fuels you or fear, you know, stops you. And for, like if fear of change stops you from watching this movie, well, again, you amount to Scott Pilgrim. I'm really sorry, but you're not really doing shit. Your letter writing campaign doesn't do shit. Your Twitter campaign isn't going to do shit. Especially not in the face of fucking Viacom. Real sorry. They will, like, Viacom will fucking send Stephen Colbert to rape you before they stop making fucking Ninja Turtles movies.
You got wind of that. You caught wind of that travesty, didn't you?
Yes, I did.
Well, that's a subject for a different episode, I believe. But if what we're saying to you sounds scary and it sounds defeatist and it sounds like we're giving up, it's not about giving up. It's not about fighting.
It's about getting fucking older. That's what it is. Like, I am still as angry as I was in my teens. But I described it to Abear like this one day, because he had said, like, oh, well, you've mellowed out. And I said, no, I fucking haven't. What's happened is that the pitcher by which my rage fills from the bottom up. So that means that the things that I was angry about when I was 15 are not the things that I'm angry about at the age I am now. So that means that, like, eventually, like, those things, it just kind of filter out. I reconcile them as I get older, as I get wiser, as experience teaches me more about myself and about the world around me. And that's good that it fills from the bottom up, because if we're talking about a rage that fills itself from the top down, then all you're talking about is the compression of rage. It is just compressing itself inside you, and it will never go anywhere. It's just going to get worse and worse and worse until you fucking hate everything. You can't enjoy anything. You know, like, I got on Noah's case once, because I had said, after, you know, being a victim of the Sonic cycle for so many years, for 10 years essentially, when Sonic Generations came out, I said, that's good. It's funny. It makes really good jokes. It makes really good referential humor. They pretty much tell you that, we're really sorry, but Sonic and the Black Knight happened. But, you know, we're not going to apologize for everything. And at the end of the day, I really like Sonic Generations' presentation. And he fucking snaps me on Twitter and is like, yes, it's really good job that Sega did giving you the exact same shit you've been playing for years. Good job, guys. And I went, fuck you. Seriously. Like, you want to talk about fucking Spoonie doesn't enjoy anything? That's an instance of Spoonie doesn't enjoy anything, where he didn't give two shits about Sonic. Like I know that he just said that to be funny, and I didn't say fuck you as, like, a genuine fuck you, but I did kind of say fuck you in the sense of, like, look, dude, I see that they're trying. And Sonic Generation like Sonic Generations was well made, fun to play, and good enough. And good enough, in many cases, is good enough.
It's that kind of that kind of mentality legitimately does piss me off. It's almost like he's trying to take your enjoyment away from you.
And he's doing it to be funny, and he's not doing it out of any sort of malice, and he's just kind of caught in the crossfire of, you know, the fact that he's particular. Like any fan of anything is particular. And we have to be particular as entertainers who are writing about media, because if we have no standards, then everything's good, nothing sucks, and no comedy exists. Like no other extra ancillary comedy can be extracted from anything when everything is good. So things have to be bad, but
There is a sliding scale of badness.
There's a sliding scale of badness, and there just has to kind of be that admission that, you know what, sometimes fucking good enough is just good enough. It doesn't have to be great. It doesn't have to be fantastic or fucking epic. You know, like, there was nothing epic about Epic Mickey. Not a goddamn thing. But
but it wasn't a bad game.
But it wasn't a bad game. It was a game that was squarely focused on being good. And as a person who didn't like the Wii, as a person who was getting ready to get rid of it after I'd already played Smash Brothers and No More Heroes 1 and 2 and the Metroid Prime trilogy, and I was about to get rid of it, I said, I'm going to give Epic Mickey a shot, because anything that has Oswald in it, I'm fucking on board. Why not? It shows the resurrection of Toontown, something that I fucking grew up with. And I was like, oh, that's really cool. And this whole idea that, you know, was first introduced in Tiny Toons, the idea that if you don't laugh at cartoons, they just get old and die, which was a really fucking dark episode.
My joke died.
Like,
you killed him.
Like, I thought that was really good. And when I played the game, I said, there is nothing epic about this game, but it is so focused on just trying to be a good platformer that it outclasses like 90% of platformers I've seen in the last few years. With platforming like petering out too, where think about how many platformers there really are in the mainstream that are left. You've got Mario, Sonic, and Ratchet.
And Little Big Planet, but...
And Little Big Planet fizzled out.
Yeah, yeah. It's the zero-sum game that a lot of fans participate in that I find to be wholly destructive, especially when it concerns something as finite as media. I mean, it has to blow your socks off, or it was just a waste of your time and a betrayal.
Mm-hmm.
And it's either or, there is no in-between. And that is so not how the world works, and that is so not how the human experience is, that works, that I'm surprised that they haven't learned that by now. Or they just become like Noah and just bitter.
All right, so let's talk about the fancy Black Shake's head face helmet.
Okay, I think we exhausted that conversation to its point. We wrung that out, and let's ring this out. It's Oculus being bought out by none other than Facebook. And the only thing I have to say is, I didn't expect that. But really, my only thoughts about it are just really reactions to the anger on Facebook. Or that Facebook bought it. Like, they're acting like that's the worst company that could possibly buy Oculus. Believe me.
Which, honestly, is like, look, you got a choice. It's either going to be Facebook or EA. Take your pick.
Yeah, that's what we thought. Or Microsoft. Oh, man, imagine if Microsoft bought that. Mm. You thought the Kinect was annoying. It's like, with new Xbox Ones, now you have to use the Oculus Rift. But it makes me get headaches, and it's really heavy on my head. Well, don't worry, we got a peripheral just for you. It's called the Xbox 360. Eat it!
Seriously, like, we've got a brand new peripheral for you to help with that whole Oculus Rift is too heavy for your head problem. It's called a pulley. The question is kind of raised in this Kotaku article about the people who are demanding a refund on their backing of the Oculus because it got bought by Facebook for $2 billion.
And I, at first I thought this anger was about like, oh man, you sold out. But actually it just looked like the anger is the fact that they backed this project and they don't get to see a piece of that $2 billion.
And that is due to the kind of amorphous language of Kickstarter. Like we all, you know, we all fucking kick into Kickstarter or Indiegogo or whatever the hell, GoFundMe. And we never really think about what that transaction of money is. Like, is that transaction of money a donation? Is it an investment? Well, you're investing in a project, but that doesn't make you an investor. That you are getting perks for having invested in the project. And that's the transaction. You give them money, they give you stuff, whether it be the game, a t-shirt, you know, you can be a character in the game, what the hell ever, you know, like it's a transaction of stuff. Like you give us money, we build this thing, we give you stuff. But that doesn't mean that, you know, like that, like Kickstarter is not a fucking IPO. So you're not going to wake up tomorrow and like invest in, you know, whatever the fuck someone's working on. And all of a sudden it fucking takes off. It's like, well, I'm going to go buy the Batmobile.
And that's, I don't know, like a lot of the stink that's being dug up on this just really smells of people not really knowing what they're doing when they're involving themselves into Kickstarter. Remember that news story that Kotaku ran about that game that was about 2 years in development that earned $50,000 and then still hasn't never seen the light of day, and it just got like it's shelved.
Yeah, like, and there's no liability, none. There's absolutely no liability because the language of Kickstarter is very, very clear about what happens to your money, which is you don't own it anymore. And the developer owes you nothing but thanks, which sucks. I mean, it really sucks that it's not protected, that you as an investor in whatever the fuck is on Kickstarter are not protected, that somebody can just take your fucking money and run. But, you know, like it is gambling, you know, like this sort of cavalier investing, this idea of crowdfunding is sort of gambling. Like sometimes it's just not as definitive. As, you know, like when we sold the Obey t-shirts, well, we showed you a picture of a t-shirt that didn't exist yet, and we also said that you get a button. Well, it's fairly easy to get t-shirts made, and it's fairly easy to get buttons made, because there's a billion fucking websites that'll print buttons for you, and that's low risk. And more importantly, like, we sold those shirts not too far above cost. So that was low-risk crowdfunding that, you know, didn't involve Kickstarter. We just did that ourselves, which amounted to a shit ton of paperwork. But still, that's low-risk. Now, when you're talking about something like the Oculus or a game from a developer that you've never fucking heard of, that's made up of a bunch of people that you've barely heard of, that's when we start getting into risk versus reward. You're risking your investment, especially if you're talking about a lot of money that you want to invest. And you are, you know, like, and you're hoping for the reward of one, you know, whatever it is that they promise you as an investor, you're going to fucking get it. Like, you get the game for free, you get DLC, you get a t-shirt, you get this thing, you get that thing. You hope that that pans out. But the further off the reservation you go, the more likely, like, the more dangerous this gets. So when it's someone who, you know, just pimped off of their company and rendered them immediately butthurt, KG, Capcom, you can trust Inafune. Like, Inafune is a byword for quality.
But then you get into hearing those stories about Double Fine and Tim Schafer and the troubles he had with that $2 million he earned through Kickstarter, blowing through that and then realizing that the project is still half finished after all the crowdsourced money came through.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, even when you have, like, a proven mark of quality, as in Tim Schafer, I mean, you can't find a more storied or more beloved figure in gaming than Tim Schafer. And you still have this growing pains as far as the development cycle based off of crowdsourcing.
Yeah, because
it's still a risk.
Like, it's still a risk, and not everybody can work for free. And, you know, sometimes unforeseen things happen, and some of the money that wasn't allocated for one thing has to go into that thing, and therefore it takes money away from something else. And you only get 30 days. Like, you only get 30 days per Kickstarter to kind of make this happen. And if you generate $2 million, And then at the end of 30 days, you make your $2 billion, you take your $2 million, you spend it. And then 6 months later, you're like, we still need more money. That's kind of the inherent problem with all this crowdfunding stuff, is that the payoff for the people running the project doesn't really happen until the game comes out and it starts selling. So, like, anything can happen during that time. And the idea of these grandiose Kickstarters, I want to fund an entire series. I want to fund, you know, this entire game, like this non-episodic game. It is gambling in a way that, you know, like if we could officially classify it as gambling, then it could totally get you into a GA meeting.
I mean, it's not as surefire as people who are using Kickstarter would like you to believe. And I think there is, I can understand the anger. I can understand the anger from the people who feel like they're betrayed by the fact that Oculus took Facebook money. But at the end of the day, Oculus needed money. There is no way around it. And I feel that if it weren't for Kickstarter, then they would not be in the position for Facebook to take interest in them. Yeah, they just wouldn't.
Which, you know, everybody who invested initially, they got their Oculus. You know, that money was made, spent, used for development and manufacture. They got their damn Oculus. And now it's about expanding the user base to, well, pretty much everyone. It's that, you know, because there's always been those news stories about Facebook is dancing with gaming. How, you know, like what is the Facebook phone going to look like? What will the Facebook game system look like? Who's developing a game system right now? Here's the Steam box. Here's the next thing that Microsoft's working on. Here's the Google game box. Everybody's dancing around these ideas of consoles. But the fact is that if you can develop a peripheral that people can't do without, then you've got the fucking market. And the Oculus is something that people are raving about that is extremely developer friendly.
And but not exactly, if I can be perfectly honest, but not exactly realistic or well, not realistic. It just doesn't seem like that's a peripheral that you could use for very long.
No, it runs into the same problem as a 3D TV, which is that, you know, you're talking about something pasted directly to your eyes where there's a program or a movie that's robbing your brain's ability to control depth of field. And there's, like with a 3D movie, it's that your brain has absolutely no control over depth of field because that's dictated by the director and the cinematographer and the list of people. With the Oculus, you have the same control over depth of field that you would in any first-person shooter, except there's a disconnect because it's not really your eyes that are doing it, it's your hands. And there are going to be complaints about motion sickness, headaches, and migraines and such. But that's the way that this stuff is going to go. You know, there are game developers that are coming up with VR departments and what can we do with the Oculus. And the Oculus is something that's only going to get cheaper over time. And meanwhile, the only thing that I keep thinking of is, like, all of this fucking talk about the Oculus and VR, and not a single fucking person makes a Johnny Mnemonic joke.
Well, Virtual Boy is the lower hanging fruit.
Like, yeah, Virtual Boy is the lower hanging fruit, but for me, I'm just like, come on, man. Fucking Henry Rollins, like, the Black Shakespeare is this and this and it's everywhere. You know, like, that's somewhere when the Oculus first came out, Henry Rollins was like, I would really like to be their spokesman and see who gets it.
Well, some of these feedback that over this story has really, well, it kind of makes me angry, I want to say, but not angry at the person, just angry at the culture, I suppose is the word. Like, angry at, like, what did you expect?
The entitled culture. Like, well, the expectation is...
Not the entitlement, just, like, not exactly knowing, like, the ignorance of the situation.
The expectation is that the indies stay indie, that the entire point of independence and new media is that, you know, like, it's supposed to be by us, for us. That's the idea.
But if I can be perfectly honest, that's a road with a definitive end.
It is.
I mean, there's no, like, if you continue down that road, you're going to reach a brick wall and you cannot advance any further.
Yeah, and that brick wall is called money. Because like, For Us, By Us is a fantastic idea, except the reason why everything, like, the reason why established things are established is because of money, which we don't have in spades. So, unfortunately, the indies just can't stay indie for very long. That, you know, Google couldn't stay not evil forever.
By its own definition, like, if something indie is successful and people keep purchasing, like, software or even hardware with the Oculus Rift, at some point or another, they will become the evil empire.
Yeah, it's because that's just the natural progression of all ventures. Like Blip couldn't stay the way it could forever, and now we work for the mouse. So,
although those tentacles are so long that it's not like I call up Will Eisner right now. It's like, hey, is this episode all right? Okay, bye.
Yeah, but the thing is that, you know, like, companies just get bigger. They get bigger with time and with sales and with audience bases and customer bases. And the end game is always going to be that whole idea that, you know, like, bureaucracy is the price we pay for impartiality. That the idea that that you lose the personal touch the more successful you are. So
it's, you know, people getting angry that, again, about change.
Yeah.
And I mean, if there's a theme of this episode, it's the fear of change.
It is absolutely a fear of change. And, you know, I say let it happen, because, I mean, for those people that feel betrayed by the developers of the Oculus for fucking selling out for $2 billion, like, you know what? You can have all the ideals in the world, but if someone hands you $2 billion and says, look, we're going to take your idea, which we think is brilliant, we're going to make it cheaper and more widely available, and that comes at the cost of your street cred, you will fucking take your street cred out back like it's Old Yeller. You know, like, that's,
you will look it right in the eye and saying, you knew this was coming.
You knew this was coming. You knew we were going to be mainstream one day, you know.
And by the way, I want to apologize. Will Eisner is the comic artist, not the former head of Disney. No. I apologize.
No, that would be Michael Eisner.
Michael Eisner. But correcting myself before, you know, some angry commenters leave their angry comments, which coincidentally leads us to our new most favoritest topic in all of Toolshed. It's a little topic that we like to call Electric Weasels Are Living in My Shorts. Now, as a provider on the internet, you cannot help but gain criticism. And criticism is natural, and the healthy attitude towards criticism is to not deny it, invite it in, give it its time, and then ruminate on what it has to say. And if you still don't see where they're coming from, then politely ask it out and say, well, do come back again, please. But sometimes the criticism comes from voices that, well, they come from a head that probably has never heard the words from a loved one, that has never heard a doctor say you are fine in their life. This is a segment devoted to the crazy hate mail that I get. And believe me, I have seen my fair share of crazy hate mail. This has always been a game between me and Mark for a while now. And I think it's high time that we share some of our favorites with you. This first bit of hate mail actually has been deleted off of Yahoo Answers, or at least the question has been asked, but the most popular answer has...
The question was asked, and then it got flagged. I would hope by Yahoo's own moderation. But thankfully, Google cached it, because they're Google. So we have it for you today, during Electric Weasels.
Electric Weasels Are Living in My Shorts. The question is it okay to hate Bennett the Sage from That Guy with the Glasses? And as the Sage from That Guy with the Glasses, I can honestly say that yes, you have every reason to hate me. Every reason that you can find, you can hate me. And this is the answer. And to protect the, well, not innocent, but to protect them, we won't be
using usernames.
We will not be using usernames. And the answer is, I gotten offended by Bennett the Sage's unfair review of Devilman OVA series. He did not bother to watch the original Japanese language of Devilman, and he watched the terrible English dub. And he thought it was terrible, made me offend, and he made his opinions as facts. And I hate his immature, arrogant fanboys who are blind sheeps, who think I have terrible tastes in animes. And he likes Inuyasha? Seriously? !!! I mean, I like Inuyasha too, but that anime is pale in comparison with other animes with more of a better storyline. Bennett never bothered to watch the original Japanese language of Devilman. He called Devilman an horrible anime. Does that moron know without Devilman, we would not have Spawn and Helsing? He don't understand the original story of Devilman. It's a tragic story about love and death. Bennett, on the other hand, called it an horrible anime. He did not acknowledge there are some people who love the anime OVA series of Devilman. He never read the original manga series of Devilman. He never understand opinions and different tastes, which is why he unfortunately some haters on Facebook. Thanks to him, one of his fans thinks I have horrible taste in animes. I feel a bit angry every single time his fans watch your stuff. They think he is always right and think Devilman is horrible thanks to you. And make fun of Vic Magnana? Okay, he is lucky he did not see that. I would have understand if it was male for kids voice actors, but him? ? Of all people! Long series of ellipses. Devilman has an unique storyline and monsters, which Bennett unfortunately did not notice. And some of my friends said Bennett did hinted he likes Devilman in his horrible Cutie Honey review. I don't think so. I don't think he ever did. Am I the only one who hates Bennett the Sage after he said Akira is horrible and the old English dubbing of Akira and he made fun of Evangelion and he does not know some people like Evangelion. Bennett might have been okay anime reviewer if he understood different opinions / tastes and if he respect a people's opinions for liking animes he does not like and if he makes fun of himself besides others and if he looks at the subbed anime and watches the English dub both and do and compare and contrast at least and make it funny. He would have had more fans and people won't mind him. But no, instead Bennett is a stuck-up jerk and he thinks he is all that and he probably gets angry and butthurt when people tell their reason why they don't like Inuyasha. Lol, Keta calling the pot black much. Am I the only one who hates Bennett the Sage and some of his arrogant, immature fans? Is it okay to hate Bennett the Sage and all the other terrible anime reviewers worse than Bennett the Sage, etc.? Wow.
There's a bunch of weasels in my shorts.
I honestly think that this is a troll question. This has to be, because when have I ever said I liked Inuyasha?
I really think that this person has a very poor grip on reality.
It's entirely possible. Oh my dear lord.
Like, what this illuminated to me was, because I'm the one that found this, is that there's an entire sect of people that are like, fuck Sage over his Devilman review. How dare he not like Devilman? How dare he fucking review the dub? How dare he not watch the subtitles at the very least? Why didn't he read the manga? Doesn't he understand that this was a poor representation of Devilman as a franchise, etc., etc., etc.? And just this torch and pitchfork, candlelight, circle jerk vigil campaign over the Devilman review, which in the grand scheme of all anime abandoned episodes amounts to little more than fucking dust.
Of all the hills to die on, that's the hill, huh?
Yeah, like that. It's not that I don't understand it. I mean, if you want to fucking talk about, you know, like gore anime is important, and you know it's very entertaining to the Japanese culture. Blah 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 blah. Blah, and, you know, like that's entirely your business. But the Devilman dub was horrible. Devilman in English or in Japanese is barely watchable. It's ugly. The character designs are shitty. In every other grievance that can be made, we made in the review, and they are all legit. And having not read the manga has nothing to do with the transaction, because here's the thing: Halo has Halo 1 and 2 and 3 and 3 ODST and Reach and 4. In between all those games are a bunch of books. You don't have to read them to understand the primary storyline of Halo. That said,
it's adaptation. That's all they are.
And it is not writ anywhere that in order for your adaptation to work, you need to know and have read the source material.
And if they do come with that caveat, those are bad, bad movies.
Those are bad adaptations. You know what would technically a bad adaptation would be like? The original Judge Dredd, where it had a fucking wall. The Great Wall of China's worth of explanation at the beginning of the damn movie. That's what happens when your adaptation doesn't stand up on its own. And and that's what we're talking about here. It's like at the door, if you need that much explanation, your adaptation is bad. Therefore, this movie, this OVA, this series is bad. And if you need it and don't have it, that source material, that scrolling wall of text, you just made the problem 10 times worse.
Just look at Dune. Know then that it is the year, blah, blah, blah. God damn it. And here's what's kind of chaps my hide. Well, not really chaps my hide, but it's just really interesting to me about this particular comment was the fact that he said, lol, kettle calling the pot black much, over the fact that I would get angry if somebody talked shit about Inuyasha. Or that I do not accept the fact that people may like the anime that I make fun of or that I say is horrible. Even though he is chastising me for liking Inuyasha.
Which, this boils down to the phrase. Anime abandon is all fun and games until the needle lands on that thing that you love. We have, on multiple occasions now, reviewed anime that I like, that Bennett likes, where we have had to put it, like, we had to put it on stage and get the tomatoes ready. And, you know, like, we mouth the words, we're sorry. But then we got a chuck, you know, like, that's just what happens. Bennett and I got into a massive fucking argument about the end of Rojin Z, because it is Bennett's opinion that Mrs. Takazawa kills everybody at the end of that movie. Now, I can't necessarily be objective about that because Bennett didn't see that movie on the Sci-Fi Channel at an impressionable age like I did. Like, if you were a Sci-Fi Channel kid in the 90s and you watched the anime festivals, you saw Rojin Z the same way I saw it. And there was no way in your little kid mind did it enter the very idea that Mrs. Takazawa killed everybody. But Bennett and I got into a huge ass argument about this. It lasted for like half an hour, and then in that half an hour extended into bouts over days, where eventually we just kind of agreed to disagree, and Bennett wrote in the lines like, well, maybe she didn't. But we never definitively make our opinion known as to whether she did or she didn't, because we don't agree on that.
It's just one of those moments where you had to compromise. Which brings me to this, our second bit of crazy hate mail. And this is on the main site. This I'm not is, telling
this,
you.
Yeah, this we can't. We won't tell you where it is, but it's not that hard to find.
Anime Abandon contains opinions some viewers will, in all likelihood, bitch about in the comments. And what does this user do? Bitch about it in the comments. I'm in all honesty at a loss for words for just how monumentally butthurt that one sentence is. Oh wait, never mind, I just wrote words for it. Apparently Sage doesn't grasp the concept of debate or tact, which is especially astonishing since he's following a school of thought that entails elevated thought through criticism. Oh, but I forgot my place, haven't I? When he does it, he's being insightful, but when you do it, you're whining. Oh, the gall we must have to challenge the god of critique. Says a lot about the man's character, doesn't it? I think his candidacy on the Burnell Awards is well warranted. Then he gives the URL to some MediaFire site. Seriously, though, Bennett, have you forgotten who pays your bills for you? It says a lot about our respect for your intelligence when we openly question you in the comments rather than simply closing out the browser. It also says a lot about our character when we don't resort to the obviously more damaging means we have at our disposal of confronting you. Not that I can foresee your intelligent viewers doing that for much longer, mind you. It's that obvious that you can't be trusted with diplomacy, so I and my peers will no longer communicate with you in such a manner. Instead, we'll communicate to you with this. And he gives the URL for the ad blocker. Enjoy your gradually sinking ship. Now, here's the thing about doing stuff like that. If you're going to use ad blocker because you don't like the ads or it makes your web pages load up slower, that's fine. I don't begrudge you for doing that. But if you're going to be using ad blocker to basically force me or anyone else who makes videos for a living into doing exactly what you want us to do, that's being a grade A crazy asshole.
Yeah, because it's entitled culture. The chain of entertainment is that entertainment is made and you consume it or you don't consume it. You don't dictate at all how entertainment is made. Like you don't editorialize the entertainment that you consume because you're not a part of its creation process. You're a part of its consumption process. Now, like in the post of that, you know, you can make your comments and in the big leagues, not the Bush leagues, they're not going to read it really. But, you know, down here in New Media where we all live, you do have somewhat of a, you know, somewhat of a voting say, not in what happens, but you know that we're reading. Now, the thing is that since you know that we're reading, you might want to take the time to read over your comment 2, 3, 4, 20 times. Give it, you know, more than 5 minutes worth of angry thought before you post it. Take some time and realize that whatever it is that you're mad about now, you're not going to be mad about an hour from now. Or maybe just realize, or maybe take a look at all the comments that are around you and just kind of go, huh, well, nobody else is mad. So my anger must be bullshit right now. Like clearly, you know, some priest touched me in the wrong place and that just made me angry forever. Or I skinned my knee and mommy didn't kiss it better. so.
What I love about this message in particular is that he's not saying that I'm going to stop watching your videos because I do not like your behavior.
He flat out says,
he says that he's going to continue. He's basically saying he's going to keep watching my videos so that he could continue bitching about what I have to say about any anime that he doesn't agree with. But he is not going to give me the satisfaction of his ad revenue view. If you hate my stuff, if you hate what I have to say, don't watch my videos. That's all you have to do.
I mean, it's not a Howard Stern situation. It's not like we're shock jocks here. I mean, we're not writing the show to be shocking. We're writing the show to be funny. And if you don't find it funny, that's, you know, well, obviously we didn't appeal to you. And we're not necessarily sorry about that because, you know, we kind of write to make, like, in the order of let's make ourselves laugh and hopefully the audience shares our sense of humor. That's the order. But, I mean, that said, We're not doing this to be shocking. We're not doing anything to you know, overtly piss you off. We're not, you know, writing these things going like, this user is really going to fucking hate this. And more importantly, that this piece of commentary came out of the opening card. There is no mention of Outlaw Star anywhere in this commentary. This guy went on a tirade over the opening card that I wrote.
And it's not like that card was even talking about criticism in general. There have been times, well, I will readily admit that I, myself, or Mark fucked up in fact-checking. Like, that term Kuwabara, I said, meant warding off evil spirits. It does not. It wards off lightning. And that is something I did not know until after that episode was released. Well, now I know. I have physical evidence proof of me getting the fact wrong. But so is life, and you learn from it.
Yeah, that's more embarrassing because pretty much it's that we fucked up in front of an audience of no less than 30,000 people.
So, you know what? Call me on the factual errors. That I get. And sometimes if you present, like, if I say an anime is bullshit, or I say I don't like this anime, and I present my reasons to it, and if you take those reasons and say, well, you know, you apply them within the same movie, and you use that exact reason why you like it, or you don't agree with my sentiment, that's fine as well. What that statement right there was really all about where the people that were not injecting any meaningful criticism, that weren't injecting any kind of disagreement, these were talking to the people who are just cannot, for the life of them, get wrap their heads around the fact that I don't like what they like, and they feel insulted by it.
Which, it kind of, like, you want to know why it is that it's about the card? It's because I beat them to the punch. That's what it is that I invalidated their opinion before they formed it with that card. Anime Abandoned may contain opinions, which some people will inevitably bitch about in the comments. Like, that's just me flat out saying, hey, you, I see you. You're bullshit. All right, let's start the show. That's why the very next card was inspired by this guy, where the card says, Anime Abandoned may know where you sleep. Think about that.
If you could take anything away from this, is when I make fun of something or if I say something sucks, that doesn't mean the people who like it are suck. You are not what you like. You are not what you like.
No. I mean, we identify with what we like. We wear what we like on our chest. Like, I'm wearing a Venom shirt right now. Mm-hmm. You know, on my jacket is my Anime Abandoned pin, is my Reboot pins. Like, you can wear what you like, but you are not what you like. You are, like, it does not embody who you are as a person. It only represents what you like. And you need to not take such grievous offense to it so quickly. But again, I just know that the fact is that that title card, that this guy went off on the title card, because I pretty much invalidated him immediately. Because he probably has posted, like, I'm sure that if we started crawling through comments in the last 6 months, that he's shown up with a contrary opinion, you know, like here, there, and everywhere, you know, like just waiting for us to fuck up, and it's like, oh, there it is.
And it could very well be that he had posted before in the comments some, you know, legitimate criticisms of the episode. And he could be very well, you know, he was very gentle about it, or he was very polite about his criticisms. But the fact that I never addressed them in any public format or never responded to his comments, he thinks I'm ignoring him. And then this comes along and he thinks that it's addressed to him.
Mm-hmm. Because anybody like this will absolutely internalize and make it personal, and then that's when they go on these fucking mini crusades, you know, like, enjoy your sinking ship. Like, it's such dramatic language. Like, I haven't seen this kind of language since the last guy, the fucking comet guy.
The comet guy, Jesus.
Like this dude should thank his lucky stars that I did not immediately call Lachlan and be like, hey, batter up.
We got another crazy man.
Mm-hmm.
I shouldn't say he's crazy. Overdramatic, yes. Hate mail, nonetheless.
Absolutely. Like, you know what you get? You get the title of Grand Thespian.
But, all right, if you just so happen to listen to this message, I'm talking to you, and I think you know who you are. You came off like a raging prick in this email. In this comment. And it could very well be that you are the biggest prick in the known universe. Or you could just be a guy who was having an especially bad day, and I just set you off in some way, and you feel entitled to this message. I will say that if you don't like my stuff, and if you don't agree with my opinions, no one is making you watch it. No one is making you watch it.
And that's simple. That's just simple truth. I mean, I can see the flip side of it. You know, like the fact that he says like this is a sentence of butthurt. No, this is a sentence of, you know, seeing and reading all of these comments, doing everyone the courtesy who bothers to comment that we read all of the comments.
And we're just talking to the bad apples who leave messages, frankly, like that.
For really no good reason. But I can see the flip side of it, because, you know, we've all watched something and you just kind of yell at the screen like, what the fuck was that? Why did you say that? That's wrong. Like, trust me, I've been there. I've been there more times than I can count, but I just kind of let that shit go because my place in the entertainment process is as a consumer in those cases. Now, my place here is a producer of entertainment, And aren't we all lucky that we are consuming entertainment that the people who are producing that entertainment actually read the comments? But, like, and sometimes, you know, things that people say in the comments end up in the show. They either end up here in Tool Shed or they actually end up in the show, and they kind of make the show better. It's not like we're cherry-picking what's good and what's bad in terms of the comments. It's just if somebody makes a legit good point that we can use in the future, that makes it. That kind of, you know, and that overall makes the show better. So it's not like we are without appreciation of people who are commenting on the show, which is, again, why it is that we read all the comments, because it's not just about fucking glad handing, circle jerking, oh my God, Sage, you're awesome. Because, you know, like it's nice to have the ego inflated every once in a while, but the fact is that having nothing but glad-handing yes-men watch your show only means that the only thing that you can guarantee is that your show is going to decline in quality over time. We need detractors. We need criticism. We need constructive criticism.
We need, at the most, fair-minded criticism.
Yeah.
Well-worded criticism. Which, because we learn nothing from comments that say, you're fag.
Yeah.
We learn nothing from that.
Like, and there was nothing to be learned from this. Like all that we learned is that you saw the title card. Maybe you didn't watch the rest of the episode. Maybe you missed out on what was a pretty good episode. Maybe you didn't watch all of Toonami Month. Who the fuck knows? But we had fun making it, and there were people who didn't like our choices. They didn't like the fact that we chose Outlaw Star, Blue Sub 6, and fucking Yu Yu Hakusho the movie.
Some people really did not like the fact that it was the Yu Yu Hakusho movie, but it wasn't like I tried to pull a fast one.
No, and it's impossible to fucking review Yu Yu Hakusho as a series right now. But the thing is that next year there will be another Toonami Month. The year after that, there will be another Toonami Month. Like, the fact is that we could do two Toonami Months every year, because it's that fucking easy. Toonami has officially been running forever.
After a 2 year, I mean.
Four. Yeah. Like, it's easy to cherry pick anything. Like for all the people who are like, hey, he's gonna review Hamtaro. We could! That's not hard. Technically, we could also review the Powerpuff Girls. That was on Toonami, too.
But at the end of the day, those three shows seem to be, one, doable, two, had a lot of history, personal history for myself and Mark, and that's all we really needed. It's not like we will never ever get to Dragon Ball Z, or we'll never ever get to Sailor Moon, but for right now, we wanted to talk about the shows that were important to us. That seemed feasible.
Yeah, so now that we've rolled through that, and we've managed to once again dodge the bullet that is Dragon Ball Z, the next Toonami month is gonna be, probably you'll be able to guess it. I'm not gonna say that you will be able to guess it, but you know, people saw Outlaw Star coming.
How could they not after we dodged it from Adult Swim month?
Yeah,
but it's still, I feel like we need to end this podcast on a more positive note. But let's not dwell on the negative criticisms. Instead, let's leave on a positive note. Do you know what that positive note is, Mark?
No.
Oh, shit. Well, then we always have to go back to our backup then. Mark, bring us on home!
Really? That, like, you actually tried to slate a positive note and then you'd ask me whether or not there's a positive note? The positive note is Tool Shed's back. The positive note is that we should be able to swing it back into a 2-week format again. And I'm really sorry that we kind of accidentally took a hiatus from Toolshed. It just kind of got really busy around here. So the positive note is we're back, we're podcasting. Sage Versus is not getting in the way of Super Toolshed, I can guarantee you that, nor is Anime Abandoned getting in the way of Super Toolshed. Nuts and Bolts is not dead. There will be another Nuts and Bolts very soon. Leave in the comments what it is that you'd like to see for Nuts and Bolts, and whatever it is that gets the most votes, then obviously we're going to do that. So, all of that said, outro music by Zero Reynolds. You can follow him on Twitter at Zerjester, that's XERJester. You can now take Super Toolshed wherever you go. Just go to BenTheSage.com/SuperToolshed. For Ben the Sage, I'm Mark the Engineer. Till next we beat, the shed is shut.